Shalom LaYehudim, Shalom LaBnei Noach, Shalom Goyim. It's the evening of the fourth day, Kaf Dalas Bishvat, Parshas Mishpotim, Tavshin Ayin Vav, the evening of the third day, Tuesday, 2 February 2016, webcasting from Israel, land of truth, enemy of lies. Not that this generation of Jews in Eretz Yisrael, leastwise its leaders, see themselves at war with the lies that world anti-Jewry tells about Jews in general, and Jews here in particular. My general definition of anti-Semitism is lying about Jews, though Israelis seem not to care. Take, for example, the fantasy of a Palestinian Bible whose national identity is inseparable from the lie that, quote, Israel stole Palestine from the Palestinians. I mean, ask yourself, what is known about this people, these Palestinians? What is known of their history over, they claim, thousands of years? The names of their rulers, their kings, heroes, their councils of elders, their high priests, whoever ruled them. No one has ever heard of the battles this people fought against enemy peoples. No one can point to a particular food the Palestinians are identified with, like tacos and sushi, pizza and frog's legs with the Mexicans, the Japanese, Italians, and French. About the only thing anybody on the planet knows of the Palestinian people is that the Jews stole Palestine from them. I, for one, am perpetually flabbergasted that no Israeli leader speaks up and tells the world that's not true. That there are no Palestinians, we didn't steal anything. In the newspapers this morning, there were lies that no official Israeli will respond to, I'm sure. The so-called Palestinian minister of the Waqf and religious affairs, Sheikh Yusuf, that's a nice stolen Jewish name, Yusuf Edais, reacted to the decision yesterday to do some construction along the Temple Mount's western wall for Jewish women who are uncomfortable praying in the company of other women without men. The Sheikh said this area is an inseparable part of the Al-Aqsa Mosque and is Muslim-owned property. He also said Israel was engaged in massive excavations beneath Al-Aqsa Mosque in its attempt to Judaize the city. For sure, those of you who know the location know that the area in question has no physical contact with Al-Aqsa Mosque whatsoever. The former is down below the mount. The latter is on top of the mount, and not over the area, but set back a bit. The Sheikh went on, quote, Al-Aqsa Mosque is part of the faith of the Muslims and belongs only to Muslims. This includes all its structures, yards, walls, and gates. The Jews have no connection to it whatsoever. The offensive against Jerusalem is aimed at consolidating the occupation in it and turning it into a Jewish city by falsifying its history and displacing the original inhabitants. This decision is a brutal attack on the Waqf and additional evidence of the Israeli aggression against Muslim holy places in an attempt to Judaize Jerusalem, close quote. And I say that with such a man who is truly representative of his people, it is simply impossible to conduct a mutually respectful compromise, come to a civil accommodation, in both senses of the word civil. First, I want to point out what may not be apparent to the non-cognoscenti of the latest twists in the Ishmaelitic mind. What this primitive has in mind here when he says Al-Aqsa is not just the mosque at the southern end of the plateau, but the whole plateau. This is why he refers to all of its walls surrounding the mount, all its gates. I think there are 8 of them. And for the western wall, which the Muslims now call the Al-Barak Wall, Al-Barak means lightning, Muhammad's winged flying horse that transported him through the sky one night from Mecca to Jerusalem. And on the basis of this miracle story, a.k.a. fairy tale, they claim ownership of Jerusalem. They now call this wall the Barak Wall, although I think the tradition is maybe only 20 years old. The Al-Barak Wall is where the horse landed, they say, and where Muhammad tied him up. This is a news story, I think, that is full of the true DNA of the Arab war against the Jews and their entire relationship to the Jewish people. The claim to Jerusalem here is nothing but a fairy tale meant to justify the shameless, guiltless theft of the heart of the Jewish religion, the Temple Mount. The Midrash teaches that Ishmael is a thief, meaning that is his essential character trait, and here is a perfect pristine specimen of this truth. Here is the head of the Muslim authority that rules over the Temple Mount, denying any connection to this mount. And keep in mind the fact that this is Islam's idea of a clergyman, a holy man, who is a master of lying about Jews, and in effect claiming that we Jews are the thieves. In a different statement yesterday, the Grand Mufti in Jerusalem, Sheikh Mohammed Hussein, said the prayer space adjacent to the Western Wall, targeted for construction to accommodate Jews who insist on praying like Gentiles, is, quote, the property of the Islamic Waqf, taken by the Israeli occupation in 1967 as part of the attempt to Judaize Jerusalem, close quote. In researching my book, the heart of which is these UN resolutions, hundreds of them, between 1945 and 1989, I came across numerous resolutions with the very same charge that Israel since 1967 has been Judaizing Jerusalem, with nary a nod to the historical truth that for centuries, before the rise of the modern Zionist movement, the Jewish quarter of the Old City, within the 16th century Ottoman-built walls, had always been the largest community. This was true until 1948, when the Arab Legion, led by the British imperialist General John Glubb, overran Jerusalem and drove out every Jew. For decades, UN resolutions were voted on condemning Israel for Judaizing Jerusalem, with the implication that it was a Muslim city, when the historical record also shows that the Muslims were always in a very small minority, even under the Muslim Turks. In 1905, under the Turks, there was a census. A total of 60,000 souls, all told, lived there, 40,000 of them Jews. That's two-thirds. And this was a dozen years before the Balfour Declaration. At the same time, of the 60,000, there were 13,000 Christians, a large percentage of them Armenians, not Arab Christians. And then there were the Italian community with its churches and its convents, and the Russian Orthodox had a community with its churches, Greek Orthodox, English and American Protestant communities. The Muslims accounted for no more than 7,000 of the 60,000, and they were mostly the Turkish administrators and the garrison, with its officers and wives and children, virtually no Arabs at all. Yet in the mind of people today, like this minister, this sheikh of the Waqf, historically Jews have no connection to the Jerusalem, whose central importance is the Temple Mount. And only that for Jews. Jerusalem has never been a center of commerce and industry. It sits astride no major waterway or commercial route. Its only significance has been religious, the religious capital of the Jewish people and religion, and it here is this savage just denying that. And I say, with such people, negotiations of any kind are a fool's errand. Last week I saw only a minute or two on Fox of Frank Luntz, the pollster, with a group of American-born Muslims, young people, who could not say yes to Israel as a Jewish state. Of course, they claim to be solid Americans and wanted the audience to know that they don't identify with ISIS, but when it comes to recognizing the right of the Jewish people to their own state, they could not. And that is because, at bottom, these proud Muslims, Islam's nuclear core burns with anti-Semitism. I say, even in its totality, Islam is a form of anti-Semitism. It's that basic. That's why the Oslo abomination was destined to fail from day one, because the uneducated narcissist Balin, its architect and his community of know-nothings, do not know that Islam and anti-Semitism are one and the same. Here is this Arab, not some crackpot popping off on a soapbox in Hyde Park with his ludicrous theories, but a minister of the Palestinian Authority, and no less the highest priest in Jerusalem in the Islamic religion, who is the highest authority over Al-Aqsa Mosque, who with not a shred of conscience and honesty insists that the Jews have no connection to the Temple Mount. They just say that since and have been saying it since they stole it in 1967. This is a marvel of psychological projection. He and his brutes are the thieves who have no connection to this mount other than their appetite for what the Jews hold dear. He is the liar, he is the thief, accusing Israel of stealing and lying. While official Israel, as always, stands mute before this enormity of falsehood and armed robbery.
אל תפגעי בי לעוזבך לשוב מאחרייך כי אל אשר תלכי אלך ובאשר תליני עלי עמך עמי ואלוהיך אלוהי באשר תמותי אמור ושם אקבר כה יעשה השם לי וכה יוסיף כי המוות יפריד ביני ובינך שוב מאחריי כי אל אשר תלכי אלך ובאשר תליני עלי עמך עמי ואלוהיך אלוהי באשר תמותי אמות ושם אקבר כה יעשה השם לי וכה יוסיף כי המוות יפריד ביני ובינך כה יעשה השם לי וכה יוסיף כי המוות יפריד ביני ובינך
Yeah, Israel stands mute. It's this oddity about Israel's Jews that never ceases to puzzle. The typical Israeli response is to pay no mind because Israelism is such a material pursuit. It lacks spirituality. Israelis across the political spectrum, that is, in the ruling class, say nothing in the face of these endless myths, fantasies, and lies the Arabs never cease telling. Here, Sheikh Yusuf Edayis accuses Israel of falsifying history, when Islam is nothing but the falsification of history. That's what the Quran is. It claims for Islam one biblical story, an important person after another. It rewrites the biblical text, and then the Quran accuses Jews of, quote, changing words from their context, in essence, rewriting the original text of the Quran that was brought down from Mount Sinai by Prophet Musa. It is basic Islamic doctrine that Musa was given the Quran by Allah on top of Mount Sinai, who brought it down, and then the Jews snatched it from him and rewrote it. And notice, too, the absence of content here. The content is all accusation against the Jews. The content of the Quran is secondary in this story. It's all really intellectual property theft accompanied by this accusation that all Islam did was to take what the Jews had stolen from Islam and distort it. And I remain constantly amazed at how official Israel looks the other way and basically buries its head in the sand so as not to have to confront the truth that with such people negotiating a mutually respectful agreement to share Jerusalem and the land of Israel is not of this world, this reality. What I would like to see is an Israel launching a major public relations campaign against the mountain of lies that is enemy propaganda, starting with this tall tale of an historical Palestinian nation with historic national rights here. Israel needs to broadcast in Arabic, on Arabic TV, on the radio. Israel needs to create Arabic language pages on the internet, Arab language sites, to lecture the locals here that their Palestinian identity is a fraud, that this country throughout history was home to Syrians in the minds of Arabs and Muslims like then. It was all Syria, and modern Syria came into being as a state in 1946. So the Arabs here have had a state since then, and they don't need another one called Palestine. Not when Haj Amin, the locals must be taught, said there was no such country, and Jerusalem was located in Syria, whose capital was Damascus, he said. And the world, too, must be told this. From the podium in the great chamber of the United Nations General Assembly, the Israeli ambassador must tell the assembly that these people are not Palestinians and not in need of a state. Tell them that Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon, all of which spread over more than half of historic Palestine, have enough land to give them. Israel need not cede one acre. Yesterday, in an op-ed in the New York Times, speaking of the UN, Ban Ki-moon continued his attacks against Israel and the prime minister, who, he said, distorted his words. Here, too, Israel stands mute before the slander of this man, whose entire attack and support for Jew killing rests on his belief that Israelis are in criminal occupation of Palestine, which makes the Ishmaelites frustrated and hateful and driven to extremism, a.k.a. murdering us. Israel rightly protests Ban Ki-moon's backing of those who murder us because they're so frustrated by our occupation, but Israel never shoots back that there is no occupation, according to international law. When Israel drove the Arab armies here from Judea, Samaria, the Golan, and the Gaza Strip in 1967, Israel announced explicitly that Israel was not an occupation of land belonging to another state because no one had recognized another state as its owner, but for the sake of humanity and expediency, Israel would guide its behavior toward the locals as if there were an occupation in international law and would await peace talks with the enemy to resolve the issue of sovereignty. Those talks never came about until 1993, and those we now know were entered upon in bad faith by the other side. They never, those brutes, Arafat and Abbas, intended to make peace with Israel within any lines. So again this week, apparently because Bibi really stung this flunky on the Arab-Muslim payroll at the UN, by his rejoinder, Ban Ki-moon again mentioned the occupation. And again, Israel plays deaf to this lie. I sometimes think Bibi and fellow Israelis are quick to protest the seeming support for terrorism because they cannot or will not confront the lie at the heart of the accusation. It's easier to protest support for terrorism than to counterattack the lie that Israel is an occupation of land that rightly belongs to the legendary Palestinians. I've really been puzzled, at least since 9/11, by an Israel that has never attempted to rebrand the enemy here as not a, political movement of nationalists, but Muslims in the same class as the Sky Devils of 9/11. Israel since then should have repeatedly told the world that we have suicide bombers in the same class as the 9/11 maniacs. In the first decade of this century, there were hundreds of attempts. And now we have today's stabbers aware that they will also be killed. It's the same modus operandi. Israel has to tell the world what PMW reports on every week. Namely, the support that Mr. Moderation, Mahmoud Abbas, tenders today's suicide monsters. Everyone that we have had to kill has been praised and called a martyr by the PA, at a street or a sports competition named for him. Israel has to portray our enemies not as Palestinians suffering from our oppressive and illegal occupation, but the same demons who brought down the World Trade Center.
וזה קורה כשמישהו פתאום עוזב אחד הולך שני חושב על כל מה שבפנים וזה קורה כשמישהו נשאר לבד מרגיש פתאום מעט נפחד מהגעגועים והדמעות דמעות של אהבה, דמעות של דאגה, דמעות ששוטפות את החיוך שבלב, והדמעות, דמעות של אהבה, דמעות של דאגה, דמעות ששוטפות את החיוך שבלב, אז כך תרמין, אשים בפנים את הזיכרונות ושים בפנים את החוויות אם יש שם עוד מקום ואל תשכח שאבא שוב דואג לך ואמא היא תמיד שלך צלצל תגיד שלום והדמעות דמעות של אהבה דמעות של דאגה דמעות ששוטפות את החיוך שבלב והדמעות דמעות של אהבה דמעות של דאגה דמעות ששוטפות את החיוך שבלב את השיר הזה שמתיישב שם בחזה עמוק בתוך הלב
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. In a separate news item today, related to the foregoing about Ban Ki-moon's third jab at Israel in a week, Israel's UN ambassador, Dani Danon, protested the publication of a UN report on the condition of ancient Palestinian women, and I can guarantee that there are many reports like these in just about every UN agency and department. When the PLO entered the UN in 1975, it penetrated to every agency and department and made sure that whatever its operations, its field of activity, the crimes of the evil Jews were discussed and written about. If, for example, the topic was the desertification in the southern hemisphere, and what to do about it. There would be language on Israel destroying ancient Palestinian land and making the land unfit for agriculture. If the topic, as here, was the status of women, the suffering of ancient Palestinian women was mentioned at the hands of Israel. And even when the topic at hand was not at all relevant to a message the Arabs wanted to insert, like here, Ambassador Dunant protested yesterday about this report that referenced the horror in Har-Nof in November 2014 when a band of savage Arab killers invaded a shul of men praying morning prayers, murdered five, decapitated one, another lingered in the hospital for a year before dying. And this report called the episode, quote, an incident in which five Israelis and two Palestinians were killed. In this language, there was no conscious massacre of five Jews by lunatic suicidal Muslims, but an incident of moral equivalence in which five on one side died and two on the other side died. Elsewhere in this report, it notes that in the period covered, eight Israelis were killed by Arabs, most of them settlers, as if that was understandable and different from killing non-settler Jews. Danny Danone protested that this report, like others, also went out under the signature of Ban Ki-moon. This, as he called it, Danone called it, absolute distortion of reality, which characterizes the work of the UN, I say. And in another unrelated news item, this one from Germany in J-Post, the topic was the Süddeutsche Zeitung, meaning South German newspaper, based in Munich, whose coverage of Israel remains notoriously borderline anti-Semitic. You know, Munich, where the Nazis flourished in its beer halls. Nazism was first an Austrian and South German cancer. As in many countries, its northern and southern cultures can be markedly different. In this case, an opinionator in the SZ accused Israel of always seeking revenge, which in turn produces a circle of violence, cycle of violence, and states that the Palestinians killed Jews out of desperation and resistance. And never mind that before 1967, not one Palestinian was reported to be frustrated because he didn't have a state. And attacking Jews in that period had nothing to do with the occupation of Judea and Samaria because there was none. In other words, no one should think, as I used to, that anti-Semitism in any serious measure outside the crackpot fringe was a thing of the past. On the contrary, it's alive and well in art. It's emanating and not from the lunatic fringes of society, but to its most respectable venues. The MSM, the UN, the EU, in Brussels, in this case, a venerable German newspaper, just like the New York Times, of little Tommy Friedman. The SZ, in 2014, published a cartoon of Mark Zuckerberg with a huge nose and the tentacles of an octopus gobbling up the world. And it was not the first time such classic imagery of Jews as monstrous, ugly animals has appeared in otherwise respectable publications. With official Israel leaving criticism of such behavior to the Simon Wiesenthal Center or the ADL, Israel has got to take its head out of the sand and stop looking the other way when our mortal enemies, the local Arabs and Muslims and European Jew haters, tell the biggest lies of the generation, and the biggest one being the Palestinian nation, whose land we stole and won't give back. Last item, it was a pleasure this morning to wake up to the news that Ted Cruz had won Iowa. And even that yesterday, breaking precedent, Prime Minister Netanyahu had endorsed him. Fine with me. Alan Dershowitz taught Cruz at Harvard Law and said even though they are politically in different camps, Cruz was off the charts brilliant. May he go from strength to strength. And there may also be a distant Jewish connection here to his success and his brilliance. His father was born in Cuba, but his father's grandfather was born and raised in the Canary Islands before emigrating to Cuba. And I have it on good authority that maybe three-quarters of the Spaniards on those islands are descended from Anusim, as we call them in Hebrew, those forced to convert to Catholicism. In other words, if there's any truth to a theory of genetically based Jewish smarts, Ted Cruz may have some of them. Okay, that's it for this Tuesday night. I'll be back, God willing, on Thursday. Until then, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.